If you wouldn't mind sitting right over there so we can all see you, we'd appreciate that. Brian and Ray?
Yeah. About the computer hookup.
Yeah. Oh, you got your computer. Oh. All right, you can sit right there then. That sounds good. That'll make it easier.
Ray Bonds.
Maybe not names.
Gotta come into the jail more often.
Yeah, right. That's my first problem.
Good, Rick.
Oh, I've got the wrong one.
Got the wrong thing.
Hello. Okay, good. All right, we're going to call the meeting to order. And tonight we have some folks here from the Sheriff's Department and the Department of Corrections, and we will hear their testimony. But before we do that, we'd like to take care of a few housekeeping matters. We have, first of all, the introductions and review of agenda. Does everybody have the agenda in front of them? And just so to introduce everyone, we have Jason Leifer, just from left to right. I think, I don't know if you folks know, but Jason Leifer is on my extreme left. The Honorable Scott Miller is next to him. Mark Solomon is right here. I'm Ray Schlatter. This is the Honorable Glenn Galbraith. This is the Honorable Betty Poole, and this is Liz Thomas. And she's honorable too, but supervisor. So excused from this evening, or at least perhaps coming later. I think Gwen said that she would be here later.
She's going to try. She will be late.
Right. She had indicated she'd be later, and Marianne Sumner, I believe, will be later, but I'm not sure about that. Otherwise, we have the full committee here. Is everybody okay with the agenda, or do you want to add? Or Jason's leaving early, and Judge Galbraith is leaving early, so we perhaps we'll fill the time if necessary. But if we get over earlier, nobody's going to complain. Any changes to the agenda? All right, it stands. The minutes of October 15th. The draft has been circulated. Yep. I know Joe has invited corrections and what have you, but do we have any substantive corrections? Any typos, misspellings, that kind of thing can be given to Joe privately and he'll make those changes. But are there any substantive changes? Seeing none, can we have a motion to accept as proposed, subject to any typos and spelling corrections?
I'll move. Ray, I listened to the audio, so I'll move.
All right, good. So, Scott? Good. Well, I'm glad that the audio is working.
The audio is great. Appreciate it.
Scott moves. Mark seconds. All those in favor say aye. 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 Any opposed? All right. That's done. At this point in the meeting, we have an opportunity for members of the public to speak briefly. These are to be distinguished from folks who would normally appear and give more extensive testimony as they wish. So is there anybody from the public who wishes to speak? And we're not limiting. If people from prior times wish to speak briefly, that would be fine. All right. So there's no public comment. In connection with the chair's report, we did interview by telephone three very qualified Cornell Law students. Two of them are third-year students who will be graduating and moving on in May. One of them is a second-year student who presumably intends to be here for his third year as well. and expressly so stated. They're all qualified, and we do intend to extend offers to two of the three for the term, recognizing that one of the third-year students will be leaving. I think his schedule is either late May or early June. We do have, though, and I wanted to bring to your attention, there was a second third-year student, but the third student, who actually is extremely qualified by his credentials and by his presentation. But unfortunately, he is availing himself of some sort of an internship off-site semester of law school, which, frankly, I didn't realize they did that up at Cornell, but there you go.
That's what I do full-time.
Oh, okay. All right. So he's on his way out of town, but he has said that he could give us about 30 to 40 hours of time between now and the time of his departure, which would be in mid to late December. And so Joe and I were discussing that there may be a project that we could, a very straightforward one issue kind of a project that we could ask him to do for us. And the concern, of course, is there are various areas of legal research that we're going to want done. But certainly by asking him to engage in a particular research project, we don't wish to forecast anything or to even suggest that we are heading in that direction. That being said, it's important for us to get some of this research done under any circumstances, just so that we know what we can or cannot do realistically. And so my thought was to ask him to investigate what would be the mechanism, if it were at all possible, what would be the mechanism or the path if there was some desire on the part of this group to recommend either setting up a DWI part or setting up any particular, it doesn't have to necessarily be DWI, but any particular part of court that would become countywide, whether it would be in a district court format or whether it would be in a part of city court format or whether it would be some standalone in some other fashion, maybe even county court. But to have somebody just research that and tell from both a constitutional and statutory perspective and perhaps the need for any kind of legislative changes, what would be the path if we decided to go in that direction? As I said, I hesitate to even bring this to the table because I really don't wish this discussion to be misconstrued by those who are listening or those who might read about it, to be misconstrued as a direction in which we are committed or to which we are committed. And so, but on the other hand, this fellow is available. By all manifestations, he appears to be very competent, and we could get some value out of him between now and the end of the year. So I'm curious as to what thoughts are, committee members.
Specifically on using this intern to research a DWI part?
Well, it can either be DWI part, it could be a landlord-tenant part, it could be a misdemeanor part. In other words, something, if we wish to go in that direction, number one, what is possible under existing constitutional and legislative framework, and number two, if we wanted to go and it were not possible under existing, what kinds of changes would be required to accomplish that legislatively or constitutionally, because I think that then gives us a more at some point we started this whole exercise by saying the sky's the limit, and I think that's important, but at the end of the day we need to make recommendations that are realistic.
I would as I listen to the audio from when the town and village justices spoke to our committee, I did hear a reoccurring thread a few times that the most complicated misdemeanor cases that some judges don't see enough to get comfortable with, and some judges also thought common sense would apply to them, where I would have to sort of disagree, particularly with DWI. Common sense often does not apply to DWI. That area of the law is so sophisticated and complicated, it does require a specialty. So I would, I've been curious about the data, Ray, because we have a DWI part that I set up at the beginning of the year pursuant to Judge Lipman's mandate that all city and county courts set up a DWI part. So we had to go and do that, and I was resistant to that, in all honesty. I didn't think it was necessary, but Judge Lipman had ordered it. I said, well, he's the chief judge. There's an order. We'll try it. And I'm somewhat of a convert. I think it works. I like it. We've got a huge volume in city court, and I've been curious to get the data on how many DWIs are in all the town and village courts, and also how many DWIs end up going to superior court information or indictment in county court. So just getting the data would be helpful.
All right. I'm not asking, please, what I want to do is, because we do have the raw data for that kind of discussion, or at least we have it or it's coming. We've asked for it from all of our local courts. What I want to do is to use this person's legal acumen to do just raw legal research.
I think it's a good idea, but let's find out what can be done under existing statutory and constitutional regimes, and what would be necessary to accomplish more, or if it's not possible under existing statutes, what would be necessary in order to make such things happen, if it can be done at all.
With respect to DWI or other cases?
No, with respect to any specialized part, as I understand Ray's law, I don't think you ought to commit to doing specialized parts at this point, but I think it's a reasonable question to ask what is possible. So let's get that answer instead of our impressions. That's
Well, can we give this person some direction of what parts we're thinking of?
Examples. Could be a DWI,
DWI part.
Could be a
youth
leader part. Could be a, but.
The three that came up, to, in my view, were the DWI, the misdemeanor, and the landlord-tenant.
And there may be others.
There may be others, but those were the. And I'm not, again, I'm more interested in whatever part it is.
You suggested, well, you had brought to our attention a youth court as well, which I haven't thought much about. So.
Right. Well, we could ask him about that as well. We're getting 30 to 40 hours. I just want to make sure we get.
Just got to concentrate on things that have been raised substantively. That would include the three you mentioned. And there may be others.
But I want to make sure, because if and I want to make sure from the committee standpoint that if by requesting this, there is going to be, for lack of a better term, there's going to be some misperception that becomes itself horribly traumatic in the community, then we can forego this opportunity and simply rely on the two other folks, and in the fullness of time, if we decide to explore that, we can have that work done. So that's really, I want to make sure that we are not, that I see this as an efficient use of available data, but on the other hand, it may be a total waste if we decide not to do it, but it strikes me that it's useful to have it done.
Finding out what we can do. It doesn't mean that we should do it. So let's find out what we can or can't do.
Any other thoughts from especially?
I mean, it seems like if we have the offer to look into this research, it doesn't mean we're going to do it. So why not take a look? So that would be my recommendation.
Judge Poole, Betty?
I can appreciate the fact that you want to utilize the intern as much as possible, and I can appreciate that. We have no way of controlling what the perception is going to be, as we have seen from past meetings. I'm rather hesitant. I think it could be severely misinterpreted, not only by the public, but also by those involved as well.
We very well may find that it's not possible. I guess I'm in favor of knowledge rather than ignorance, so I'd rather know one way or the other.
Jason? All right. All right, so even though there seems to be some reasonable dissent here, I think the consensus, at least the majority consensus, is that we should go ahead and do that. So with your permission, I will go ahead and commission that kind of a research project. But again, with all the caveats that I have just spread on the record. All right, thanks. That's all I have at this point. Joe?
I have no report.
Okay. All right, let's get to the meat of this. And we are lucky to have here this evening two very knowledgeable, three people actually. We have Undersheriff and former county legislator Brian Robeson. We have the head of, and forgive me, is it Captain? Yes. The head of the Correctional Services at the Tompkins County Jail, Captain Ray Bunce. And frankly, I'm sorry.
Kelly Gale, the New York State Police.
Okay, thank you. Oh, good. Thank you very much. The New York State Police, Kelly Davis, is it? Thank you. All righty. So, who would like to go first? What we'd prefer is some sort of a presentation, 5-10 minutes, whatever you wish, and then we'll open up to questions.
Very good. Ray, I think I'll start, and I'll start by saying thank you to the panel for looking into this matter. I know it's pretty daunting, but from our end, it's also fairly interesting. We're always looking for efficiencies in our operations and all operations. So it's with that we put together our presentation today. This is by no means all of law enforcement in Tompkins County. I took it upon myself to talk to as many administrators, at least, of law enforcement as I could. I tried to put stuff together just as ideas, some thought-provoking type stuff. It's not universally endorsed within law enforcement. It's simply discussion items for you folks to either ask questions or, you know, we'll research them as we go along. Again, it's geared towards efficiencies on our side. Ray and I are going to try to break this up into two parts. Ray wants to speak initially about things as they exist today, and maybe ways that we can make things more efficient immediately. And I'll give some thoughts, again, that I've collected through speaking to people on possibilities down the road with an eye towards, I think, what your charge is, and that's looking at ways of, I hate to say consolidation, but that's how it was relayed to me, but consolidations, efficiencies, that sort of stuff. So I guess I'll turn it over to Ray at this point.
I don't have a fancy PowerPoint to put together. The undersheriff keeps me way too busy to prepare all that stuff. But I also want to thank you guys for the opportunity to come here to present some items. First of all, I also want to say that as far as the courts go and the corrections division, we appreciate all of the communication that we get from the courts, from the clerks. I know your clerks and my records officer talk constantly all day long. figuring things out, trying to plan the best possible way to get inmates to court and to also, you know, take care of securing order issues and things like that. So thank you for that. One of the things that I wanted to bring forward was in regards to inmate transports. Currently, obviously all of the transports happen Monday through Friday. There's no doubt about that. You got to figure county court is pretty much open from 9 till about 4 every day. Same with city court. Various things going on with city court. Most of the town courts have evening times. Several also have early morning times. One of the things that happens for us, because, for example, this morning we had 111 inmates in custody, so we're managing their transports to and from the courts on a daily basis, trying to figure out the best way to get them there at the least expense to the taxpayers. One of the issues when I look at the court's calendars and the schedules that come up is that several courts, for example, on Monday evenings, there's three courts in the county that start at 5 o'clock. That's one example. But what that means for us inside the jail is we may have an inmate going to, town of Caroline at 5 o'clock. I'll send an officer and an inmate over there. They have to be, obviously the inmate has to be transported. And I'll also send one to, let's say, Enfield at 5 o'clock. That's two officers going two different directions. My problem constantly in the jail is the staffing and keeping all of these things that are not a constant. Obviously, it's not every Monday night that I got to send people in those directions. But there are times when we've been sitting in, let's say, Caroline, and I am just using examples. I am not pointing it out in any way. We'll be sitting out there and come to find out the same defense attorney has both inmates. He's at one court taking care of one issue and then has to drive over to the other court. Where if those were the cases, we probably could have done the same thing and done it with one officer, done a little switcheroo and make it all happen rather much more efficiently, as I would put it. But that's just an example. And what I wanted to say was if there was any way that, maybe the magistrates could get together and talk about the possibilities of setting up schedules throughout the week that might include assigned counsel considerations and also the sheriff's office considerations for transport issues in regards to that stuff. Some of the other things that come up for us, drug courts are big issues, understandably. Always a good thing to keep the programming and trying to assist people with issues. We do, in fact, get some last-minute requests from the courts. We get that last-minute order to produce, and we do everything we can to accommodate every bit of those. Sometimes it's a bit of a struggle and a little stressful on making it happen, but I'm pretty confident to say that we've always done that. But I guess overall, what I'd like to see is some weekly scheduling that's kind of set in stone, how we do things, how we bring people, when we get them there. I think it would be helpful for both the sheriff's office and assigned counsel, and I should include also the district attorney's office, because usually all of those entities need to be at court at the same time. So that's pretty much that. If you have any questions about how we operate or how we do things, feel free.
I think what we're going to do is, because we do have two people who are going to be leaving earlier, so normally I allow all three people to speak and then we go ahead, but I know that Judge Galbraith and Jason intend to leave in about 20 minutes, so could we, if you folks have questions, would you just pop them out here and let's talk about them?
I've got a question. Can you give me a rough idea, Captain, what percentage of the inmates are pretrial detainees? Just an average.
I can tell you that my sentence population has gone down, and I don't have the paperwork with me. I had them earlier at a meeting. Do you have those?
Thanks.
Okay, good.
I'm really looking for a ballpark.
And I would say that our sentence population is probably more like 40% of the population.
Okay, so 60% of the 100 or so are pretrial detainees.
Or what I would call not sentenced. So those people also include parole violators, state-ready inmates, convicted inmates.
Just awaiting sentence.
Correct.
Well, one of my biggest concerns is the number of people that we have as pretrial detainees up there. And if you have any sense of, and this may be hard for you to answer, but of how many of those people do you really think should have just been released ROR or RUS, and they probably would show up in court the next time? Do you have any sense of that?
First of all, I don't put people in jail. You guys know that.
And that's what I'm getting.
I'm trying to
figure out if we're putting too many of them in jail prior to conviction.
I can tell you that the people that I deal with, many of them have substance abuse problems, and many of them have mental health problems. So it's certainly not on me, I guess, to say whether they would be safe out in the public, or whether the public safety would be benefited if they were out there. I can tell you that in the past, I've seen some people come in on some pretty silly things, some silly charges. I can tell you that I do not see that anymore. I believe that I think the systems, they seem to be getting the people in there that need to be in there. In saying that, I'm talking about public safety. Whether they should be in jail or not, maybe they should be in some other public housing or something to that effect. But
just permission, please. Mm-hmm. Another way of asking that might be, what you indicate that about 60% of the, at any given time, roughly 60%, have not been sentenced. My question is, of that 60%, can you give us a sense of how many of those are originated or have proceedings pending in the local courts as opposed to county court or city court?
No, I couldn't tell you.
Is that data available in some fashion?
Yeah. Probably. Yes. I don't have, it's not a stat that I would keep, but I think it could come out of our jail data for sure.
Could it come out readily, or do you, I don't want you to go to a lot of work, but on the one hand...
It may not be fresh, it may not be up to the minute, but I think we can pull data out of the system from the prior year to give you a sense of right. How much comes out of town and village courts.
In other words, if it turns out there's only 10 or 15 of those at any given time, that is significant versus if it's 40 or 50, that type of thing.
Yeah, I mean, I could do a rough or a quick snapshot of the people that are in there right now. I could get a hold of my staff, have them figure that out, maybe report it to the, snapshot style. I could do that pretty quickly. But as far as the data coming out, that would be...
It's a given from the statistics that 51% of the criminal matters in Tompkins County are from City Corp.
51% of all criminal matters.
Yes, sir.
But that doesn't mean that 51% of the folks at the jail who are considered a pretrial detainee, or I'm sorry, pre-sentence detainees, are from city court.
That's true. But the majority of all the interactions with which we encounter, because of the volume, the biggest one is city court.
Okay. I'm sorry, I interrupted. Go ahead.
No, that was what I was at.
Jason, do you have, and by the way, if you have any questions of any of the three, even though they haven't had a chance yet to present, I want to make sure that whatever questions you had coming in today will get addressed. Anybody who's leaving early? Could you use your microphone, please?
How do you think that the system where you're describing the courts and assigned counsel and yourself working together schedule?
So, you know, just thinking about it, I'd have to say that if we knew exactly what, you know, if we had different time for each court, I think that would be helpful, because then, you know, assigned counsel could have the defense attorneys there. They would know that they're not going to be needed in a different area. We would know ahead of time if we have anybody from that court that will be going in that direction, for sure. I should also say, too, that, you know, just because the towns have these courts at that time doesn't mean that we're necessarily bringing an inmate there every single time. You know, these are, but I will say that Monday nights do tend to back up a little bit.
Which courts are Monday night?
I have Dryden, Caroline, Groton, Enfield, and Ulysses.
Five courts?
Yes. Scheduled Dryden's at 4 o'clock, Caroline, Groton, Enfield at 5 o'clock, and Ulysses at 6 o'clock.
Just to finish that, how many officers then are typically tied up on a Monday night among all five places?
I would say taking people to court, 2 to 3.
What's the worst case scenario on a Monday with lots of inmates having to be transported to five courts?
Correct.
And with same attorneys having to go to different courts, what do you see as we're in disaster mode? How many officers could be tied up on a Monday?
Well, if I had multiple inmates going to Dryden, that would, if it was more than one, I'd have to send two officers, so two, if I had one at each court, two, three, four, five, probably six, possible. I have not had that.
What are the logistics of training?
One officer, one inmate, two officers, multiple inmates.
Okay, in one vehicle?
Yes. We try to do that. You know, I have one van. If I have multiple inmates going to a couple different courts, I may send a couple different vehicles.
I understand.
Yep.
What would you do if you had the coordination? And obviously some of this is outside of our capacity to affect change, but what would you do with the multiple inmates if you had to schedule in a more rational way? So if you had, let's say, two courts at 5 o'clock, would you leave one in the van with the second officer while one might go inside and drive them into the first officer? Is that the...
Typically, we send one vehicle to the court that we'd be going to. We don't do a round. We don't go to one court and then another. We usually leave from the leave right from the jail.
Is that for security reasons? I mean, it would be more efficient, obviously.
It would be, but security is an issue. Leaving people outside, not the greatest thing, especially. No, we do not do that. No.
Are there any further questions of either Judge Galbraith or Jason of any panel member? And then we'll continue, Brian or Kelly, whichever one. All right, go ahead. Yes,
I just wanted to tell you, we did pull the statistical information, and in September we had we averaged 25 sentenced inmates for the month of September.
And you had about 100 total?
Our total population for that month was, average total was, I wish I had my glasses, but it was somewhere around 93.
Okay. And you're saying that, just since we're focusing on that month, you're telling me that you would be able to provide us with the data of those remaining 68 inmates, which ones, frankly, came out of which courts? Would you be able to do that? Which ones had matters pending in which courts?
Because this is average data, that's going to be...
Oh, that's going to be hard. You're
rather
right.
Difficult.
You're right. Okay.
So,
just take a snapshot.
I can do a snapshot tomorrow and send it to Joe.
All right. Fair enough.
And let him distribute that.
All right. And if you think that snapshot is skewed, just anecdotal experience, then let us know and maybe take another one. Okay?
Okay.
All right. But then Joe has the data generally for last year, correct?
Yes.
So we could figure out averages and what have you. And that could be done through number crunching. We don't need to... All right. Why don't we put that on the list of things for our interns to do there?
Fine.
Okay. Fair enough. Who would like to go continue the discussion? Officer Daly, or... And please forgive me. Are you a lieutenant or a captain? Or
Sergeant.
All right. Sergeant Daly, would you like to speak, or do you want Brian to speak? Yeah. Okay, thank you. Yep.
And we put things together, and just it's easier for us to do in a PowerPoint type setting, and also I know it impresses Joe, so we like to do it. So these are, you can call them recommendations. They could be even just the thoughts, that sort of thing. From our office, but with information also gathered from other law enforcement officers, particularly the city. And the areas of consideration, the questionnaire that you folks sent out, you had basically a bunch of different category type stuff. We pretty much stayed with just these three categories. And the only reason why I put the first one on is only to tell you that in law enforcement, we do and will remain silent on this issue of lawyer or non-lawyer judges. I don't think you're ever going to get anybody to commit. That way, as long as there is one, that's the important thing there. We did speak, or we are going to speak about consolidation or elimination of courts. And a big one throughout law enforcement is centralized booking and after-hour arraignments. Like I said, we'll remain silent on that. As long as things are consistent and efficient, that's pretty much it. We'll fly right through that. Any of this stuff, we view it through our own lens as far as operational and personnel issues. One of those, obviously, being in Ray, has just already spoken about that. We do a lot of transports from the county jail, and a lot of times these are inmates that are transported multiple times from arraignment through, you know, if there's a sentencing. There could be, and you folks all know, there could be many court appearances in between. One of our main goals is to get law enforcement back out on the street quicker, however we can do that, because we know through our own county budgets, city budgets, that sort of stuff, there is no expectation of getting a lot more law enforcement officers hired, and add to your complement. So we have to think of ways to better and more efficiently use the time that we do have them there. Again, after our arraignments should be more timely. We'll get into that here in a little bit. Centralized booking. Just about every law enforcement officer that I speak with is very much in favor of centralized booking. And that is particularly germane when you talk about after hour arraignments, because courts aren't in session. So it's conceivable that you make an arrest. From the time you leave, you place that person under arrest, go do your own booking, drive them maybe in the same direction you just came from for an arraignment, wake up parties, could be judges, could be counsel at first arraignment, could be the district attorney's office, actually do the arraignment, drive back, put them into jail if they're remanded. At times that can be hours. And when you're in a county where you may only have three patrols on for the entire county, you can see the effect that has on folks. And if we can do something to mitigate that, we should be trying to do it. Our thoughts are to have all after-hour arraignments at a central court, and we're not saying which court that is or where it would be located, anything like that. We do have thoughts on that, but we can get into that in just a sec. This is kind of a compilation of the things that were told to me was to basically create two arraignment courts countywide. Basically a city and a county. And that the county court, arraignment court, would include city cases as well. You'll see why here in just a sec. But and city court, obviously, which is by far the busiest court, they continue to do their own daytime arraignments and otherwise business as usual. For the other court, the consensus is to locate that court at or near the public safety building. Locate centralized booking in the same building to facilitate a smooth transition from court to jail. It's possible you may want to look into retaining jurisdiction of all misdemeanor and above cases, and basically remand cases, of course, with the exception of city court. City court would retain jurisdiction on those. The thought processes behind that is to, instead of doing transports, you're simply walking people basically from one side of the building to the other. Whether it's an arraignment, whether it's a couple days down the road for a preliminary hearing, possibly have that as the court of jurisdiction throughout. It's our thoughts of having an efficient way of doing that. Now, I did hear Judge Miller. We had a brief conversation prior to tonight. He informs me that it is not, presently anyway, It's not legal to have a court within a jail. Right now we have a law enforcement component on one side of the building, a jail on the other. I don't know if the middle constitutes not being there. Maybe that's something for your intern that's doing some research, if you know what's possible and what's not. I guess it wouldn't make much sense to have another building right next door, but I suppose that nothing's off the table at this point. Utilize close proximity to Tompkins County Jail for bookings, arraignments, preliminary hearings, and misdemeanor trials. These are just possibilities. This is where you would have to decide if it's a misdemeanor trial. Is this where you want to use lawyer judges? I mean, law enforcement doesn't care, doesn't have any preference one way or the other. But we know that that's a consideration for this panel. May actually be convenient for counsel at first arraignment for OAR. Those sorts of entities that do have to go to courts on a regular basis. As we said earlier, a lot of this stuff would allow law enforcement to return to duty quicker. May allow town, village courts to reduce staff, possibility of one justice. These are just, these are not our recommendations. These are just thoughts out there. One of the disadvantages, you may feel as though it may reduce local courts. And they may end up handling things such as what you see in front of you here. Another disadvantage, you may, if this were to come to fruition, you may have to hire additional judges or staff for the new court. I would, at the very least, I would believe that the corrections staff, because they would be the people actually doing booking, doing centralized booking, are those folks. My personal opinion is they're already understaffed, but at least you wouldn't have to do the transports, which in just about all cases, anytime you do a transport, you're probably in an overtime situation, because staffing is so tight presently. If that were to occur, you may want to, or may be forced to, get the patrol function, the civil investigative, all that sort of stuff, out of that building to facilitate that court, the arraignment court, the judges, and another thing that's not within this, but I go to enough meetings at CJATI and those sorts of things to know that that building is also in desperate need of programming space. And there may be a way to fit that in as well. Again, just thoughts that have been out there. And I know that's a lot, and we will attempt to, any one of the three of us will attempt to answer any questions you might have.
Good. Thank you. Thank you, Brian. And Sergeant Daly, if you wish to speak, fine. Otherwise, you can just answer questions. If you have any comments now, that'd be fine. But otherwise, you can just jump in response to questions. Okay, great. So let's just turn to the panel. Let's try to get some questions here. And frankly, I'm going to start with Judge Miller, Scott Miller. Go ahead.
Sergeant Daly, and I'm trying to, since we have a audio record of this, it's I'd like you to respond to this, but I'd like us to make sure that we have a full record so the public can understand the process of a trooper or a deputy sheriff or a local village law enforcement that they go through when they make an arrest. And I want to see if I understand it. For example, last night I talked, my understanding was one of your troopers arrested a individual at about 5 p.m. And I don't know anything about the case. It wasn't in front of me. I spoke to an attorney about this to try to understand the logistics of the New York State Police. The arrest occurs at 5 p.m. The individual is brought back to the state police barracks for fingerprinting, photograph. All the paperwork has to be processed. The accusatory is drawn up. That could take hours. And the attorney informed me that the individual who was arrested at 5, the paperwork was completed at about 1 a.m., 2 a.m. That individual has been in custody for 6 or 7 hours. An attorney is, a judge is then attempted to be located by the New York State Trooper. So it takes an hour or two to find a judge, maybe the judge of the court where the paperwork is actually going to be filed. Then the judge has to find an attorney, and the attorney informed me that the attorney was contacted about 2 a.m., and by 4 a.m., the arraignment had occurred. So now we're talking 11 hours for this process. Trooper bringing the defendant to the local court, and I don't know if the defendant was released or not, but if the defendant had... So is that the process that... is pretty customary with when someone is arrested and the processing starts. Is that unusual, or is that, could that be pretty much?
I would love to know what the charge was. Can you hear me?
Yeah, if you could, yeah, we need to, thank you.
Oh, I'm sorry, is that good?
Yeah, it works, great.
Okay, I don't know what the charge is. I'd like to believe that had to be at least higher than any felony, because we, you know, as a police officer, I will add that unless we have to arraign somebody, we're fine with issuing appearance tickets. We actually prefer it.
Sure.
It saves me 6-7 hours of paperwork. So I can't comment on this case. I wish I knew what the case was.
I'm not asking about this particular case, but does this come up where you could have people in custody and waiting to see a judge and have a counsel for 3 hours, 4 hours, 5 hours?
To have somebody in custody for that long?
Yeah, from the
absolutely.
Arrest?
I would say that's more common than, absolutely. Okay. That's I would say 4 to 5 hours is probably a minimum, depending on the charge.
Okay. And then you know, 2, 3, 4 a.m. arraignments in some town court?
So possibly. Depends on where the crime was committed and, you know, where we can obtain a judge and things like that, yeah.
Sure, I have one more question, but go ahead.
Specifically.
It's all computerized at this point, yes.
But Brian doesn't see the stuff that you're entering, does he?
No, we all have different databases.
You don't see the stuff that Brian's folks are entering up in the sheriff's office. facility, what would be the data, communications, hardware, and software that would be necessary to make that work?
I don't know that that could actually be a centralized database. I mean, as an agency, we have a completely separate records-keeping system than the Sheriff's Department at this point. So we'd need our own computer with our SJS and our tracks and our, I mean, you know, we...
Is it fair to say you have to give a lot of thought to this question in the list for a minute?
I can tell you I worked in Nassau County, Long Island, and we had centralized booking, and it worked. We did all the paperwork at our own locations and went to the court or the jail and submitted paperwork, and the people were arraigned in the morning. It was, I mean, I think it can work. I think it's definitely not going to be, I'm going to be sitting next to a deputy doing my paperwork with a defendant. It'll be, I'll do my paperwork at my station. This is how I see it. I do my paperwork, and then I bring them to a central booking location.
Yeah, maybe to follow up on what you asked Kelly, in fairness to her, the countywide records management system is shared by the city, the county, all the villages. The state is different in that respect. That's not to say that they can't use the centralized booking facility as basically a deposit of their folks. Mm-hmm. Ours would be a little different in that we could do the basic accusatory type stuff, things that have to be filed by the officer. And then at that point, they can pass them off then. And, you know, there may be a possibility of even having a holding cell. Presently, the sheriff's office does not have a holding cell. The only one is the city of Ithaca. But if we were to have one, you wouldn't even have to have arraignments at night, or certainly the frequency of them doesn't need to be what it is now. They basically have no other choice now but to do an arraignment in the middle of the night, and you know, you're waking folks up and
right. But I'm going to interrupt on that, because I think what you're implying is then that you would just, an after-hours arrest would result in the individual being held at the jail until the following morning, as a matter of course.
I'm saying they could be.
They could be.
Yes.
But you could be given an appearance ticket. I want
sure,
to follow
you can
up.
Take bail. You can
if I may, when you mentioned that in Nassau County, you had a consolidation of the records, are you saying that Nassau, because Nassau County, does that have a single countywide police force?
Yes, it has a county, Nassau County Police. It has a district court, and
were the New York State Police data also plugged into the countywide data, or was it still two separate systems?
New York State lights. We maintain our own autonomy, so no, it does not. It's not combined. They may hold some of our stats in that we brought in 100. You know, arraignments or something, but
okay, so that's
no,
always
it's a separate, completely separate.
Completely separate.
Yeah.
And then the other, if I may, just one final. How long, when you do that, let's say you are going to take somebody for arraignment, does that tie up the New York State Trooper for that entire 11-hour period?
There's a lot of, you know, issues. Is it a felony? We have to have two troopers, not one. Is it the trooper been working for 12 hours, and are they done, and I'm going to get somebody else to cover for them to do the transport? So, I mean, it could be.
It's the equivalent of. It's not as if there's waiting time where people are doing other things. It's if when there's an arrest and somebody's going to be eventually taken to a court for arraignment, there will be the equivalent of at least one trooper being tied up on a continuous basis. It might be not the same person, but there will be the equivalent of one trooper, full-time equivalent of a trooper being tied up for that entire 10 or 11-hour period. Is that correct?
Until that person's out of our custody, yes.
And if there were some kind of a centralized booking area, what would that number be? Would it be 10 or 11 hours, or would it be 4 or 5 hours?
I have no idea. I mean, it would be the trooper who would have to do the, I observe the offense, I'm signing the informations or the felony complaints, however long that would take. I mean, a lot depends on the experience of the officer. I mean, there's a, you know, you could, if it's five felony charges, we're going to be there a while. If it's one e-felony, it may be 2-3 hours.
Okay, but okay. We're just trying to quantify, you know, everybody says, yep, centralized booking makes sense. After hours arraignment at a central place makes sense. But can we put some numbers so that we can justify this other than just people just saying it? That's the real question. All right, I'm sorry. I did interrupt Mark and Scott. Scott actually has the floor, so go ahead.
For Undersheriff Robeson and Sergeant Daly, would something like this be feasible? A central booking location is located right in the middle of the county somewhere, and there's a separate building, an arraignment court. Could the New York State Police, the sheriff, if an arrest is made and the person is not going to get an appearance ticket and it's 4 or 5 a.m., could the paperwork for those charges be filed at the booking facility? The person be held for a half an hour or a few hours at the booking facility, whether it's a Dryden case, a Caroline case, a Danby case, and at 8 or 9 a.m., anyone who is waiting to see a judge and have counsel, the arraignments occur at 8 or, and instead of, Undersheriff, you had talked about the court's retaining jurisdiction, what would it be possible that this county holding facility or lockup where there could be seven days a week of, or maybe it wouldn't be that much, but 8 or 9 a.m. arraignments for anyone who's in custody for a few hours, would it be possible then that the charges could then be sent to the proper jurisdiction once the person has been arraigned with counsel before a judge? Why would there have to be the retention of jurisdiction? Wouldn't it be possible to have the case electronically filed with Danby Court and Dryden Court, and then the Court of Geographical Jurisdiction has the case where the jury trial is going to occur? So is that possible?
Sure it is. Yeah. The only reason I brought up that example was for the convenience, basically, of law enforcement, just to get out of the transport business. You have a felony prelim that's going to occur 2 days from now.
Right. I think you're at the
jail already.
Right. I think what you're saying is the subsequent proceedings, it would be more efficient if it all were at one place.
Right.
Okay. Yep. In terms of transport.
Yep.
Mark.
That's great.
Yeah.
That you add to that assignment for the 30 to 40 hours, it's a related question, whether retention of jurisdiction in a centralized booking court would be possible under existing statutory constitutions. I don't think it is.
Well, we can certainly, let's find out how much time you can spend, because another question also is the question about the courts at the jail and can you divide it in half, et cetera. So I'll talk to this particular individual, and, you know, he may be law review, but I don't know if he's Superman. You know, so we'll try. All right, let's turn to my right here and see if we can. Judge Poole, do you have some questions?
Yes, I have a question and a statement. Captain Bunce, you had mentioned that you would like weekly schedules from the courts. It would be beneficial. What type of schedules were you inquiring about?
Currently the courts have a particular time, a night and a particular time, usually.
That they hold court.
That they hold court, correct. Mm-hmm. The efficiencies fall in where I have three courts in the county, within the county, maybe two courts have their time at the same time. if those could be, in some fashion, if they could be, you know, separated out, maybe on a different night or a couple hours apart, something to that effect, that would reduce the staffing that I would need to do transports.
Because I know there have been occasions, because my court happens to be held on Monday nights, mm-hmm. okay? And there have been occasions where I've received a phone call and asked if it would be all right if you transported them at 6 o'clock or whatever. I have no problem with that. Do you get that same flexibility with the other courts?
Yeah, as I stated in the beginning, we have great communication with the courts and the clerks. You know, I in no means want to hurt that, but we do get it from all the courts, absolutely.
So they are flexible because
Yes.
Okay. Is what you're telling me it would be better if, let's say, we've got, you said, what, 5 courts on Monday nights? Caroline, Dryden, Groton, Ulysses, and Enfield. 5 courts.
Correct.
So if, say, 2 of those courts changed to a different day and or night, that would be more beneficial?
It would definitely, you know, be easier to staff the transports as far as the sheriff's office is concerned.
Whether it be during the day or night?
Yeah, exactly, yes. Like I said, we have, during the day, we have county court pretty much all day long. I mean, not necessarily that we're there, but we're probably planning something at some point for county court and also for city court most days of the week. Evenings, I guess Monday night is the congested evening during the week for sure. There's other ones. Tuesday morning, I have Ulysses and Lansing both have court at 9:30. You know, so there's another example. It's 2 courts in the county. What's that? Need a bridge. Exactly. But, you know, but having to send one to Ulysses and also to Lansing, you know, that's definitely going to be 2 people for the same court time. And yes, to answer your question, the courts have always been flexible with us. Very appreciative.
Okay. One more question. Just so I have it clear, you're going to get us a snapshot of the percentage of the inmates that you have up there that are from the town and village courts as opposed to being held for parole violations, sentence, and or county and or city?
Yes, correct? I will break it right down to our current population, and I'll tell you who's holding each person.
Okay, and then just a statement, if I may, Mr. Chair.
Yes.
This one's for Brian. I had an occasion a couple weeks ago where I had 3 co-defendants and I got called for an arraignment. It was very nice that the investigator called me and gave me a heads up. Then, of course, I had to get 3 attorneys.
Sure. Yeah.
Okay. That gave me ample time to line up the attorneys. And Julia, I must say, I had no problem getting 3 attorneys, the on-call attorney and 2 other attorneys. They were very accommodating. The first time in a long time that I was able to get 3 right off the bat. But anyway, that is helpful. If the judges can get a heads up, especially, you know, with 3 co-defendants, and or even 1, because what used to take maybe an hour now may take 2.5 to 3, depending on where the attorney is coming from.
Mm-hmm.
So if we could get a heads up, that way it enables us, the judge, to contact an attorney and have them ready for when I call. Then your investigator called me and he says, we're on our way. I called the attorney. We all arrived at the exact same time, and there was no delay whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's very helpful. And Kelly, you may wish to excuse me, Sergeant Daly. You may wish to, you know, let your troopers know that too. It is very, very helpful, and it expedites the whole process.
Yeah, agreed. And I'm glad you told me about that, because that's the way it should be. Now, don't call you at 1 o'clock and say, "Hey, we just arrested somebody, and we're going to bring them sometime."
Exactly.
Might be 6 in the morning, but we're going to bring it. You know, there's no sense waking you up for that. But when you have a, you know, when you can be fairly close as to when you're going to arrive, then that's just common courtesy to call and do that.
Yes, and we do appreciate it. As I say now, especially needing to retain an attorney on the first appearance.
Sure, yep.
Thank you, Judge Poole. Liz, do you have questions?
Well, I don't know if it's exactly a question, but I did speak to one of the justices in the town of Ulysses, and he had heard, you know, that there was this problem of Monday evening congestion, and he said, you know, we could change that. So I guess the question maybe to you is, like, is there a way of, since you're in contact all the time, and certainly Ulysses is willing to change, you know, could you coordinate that or just ask the questions? We can see if we can move things around. There's, you know, our building is very full, but maybe we could change the planning board around to Monday nights or something like that. So, you know, I think there's a willingness that would be something that we could do right away that would help you out. So just a comment.
Thank you. I have a couple of questions that I'd kind of like to get some numbers on. So I'm asking you for your best guesstimates, and hopefully better if possible. First of all, and think of this in terms of the amount of time or money that is spent in scenario A, which would be the existing, versus the amount of time or money that would be spent in scenario B, that would be something along the lines of a centralized booking area, arraignment part, that type of thing, all right? I'm not expecting to go beyond the booking and arraignment. In other words, I'm not talking about retention of jurisdiction. So, first of all, with respect to the transport officers, and this for Captain Bunce, are you able to kind of give us on say a weekly basis, a monthly basis, what would you expect would be the difference in the amount of time that would be necessary of your transport folks if we had a centralized booking?
So we're definitely, corrections is definitely not doing the arraignment transport. That's going to be done by a deputy.
Okay.
But subsequent to that, if there was any way to do any court appearance right there at the facility, that would cut the transport time probably by at least an hour on each court appearance.
So if there is no retention of jurisdiction issue, what you're saying is the only place for savings is as far as the corrections folks are concerned, would be in coordinating the schedules of the courts.
I look at that as just a current efficiency that might be helpful to the county, yes.
That theoretically you could, instead of on average using 2 to 3 officers per court night, you might be able to cut that to one.
One, yeah. That's
all right.
That's
Let's
what
hear
I'd like
from Under Sheriff Robeson on because the number of officers, if there were a centralized booking, how much time or overtime, how much would we be able to save by doing that?
I would hesitate to try to quantify that. I'm not prepared to do that. I can tell you that simply an arrest and the basic paperwork needed for arraignment could be done on an average time. Let's call it a couple hours. That might be the outside, but a couple hours, and you may need to grab a voluntary statement, or you know, it's hard to say because each case is totally different. But a couple of hours from that point, when you have fingerprinting, processing, making arrangements with the court to go to court, then going to court. As Judge Poole said, it's not uncommon in this day and age that proceeding could last an hour or two, and then transport back. So all that time from when your basic accusatory information is done on could be saved or could be done by a transport officer. And don't forget, one of the things we're thinking about is not only the savings of time, but what the cops are doing with their time.
Right. In other words, you're able to get them back on the street faster.
That's right.
So what I'm hearing you say, and correct me if I'm wrong, but you're talking a couple of hours, so 1 to 2, perhaps 3 hours, for the general, up to the point of we're going to either find a judge or we are going to issue an appearance ticket.
Mm-hmm.
Is that accurate? Somewhere between 1 and 3 hours?
Yeah.
Okay.
I would say.
And then beyond that, it's going to be another 1 to 3 hours, sometimes more, if you have to find a judge and go to a court after hours.
I'd say that's correct, yeah.
All right. Now, the second, and that is, those are not transport people. Those are officers who would otherwise be on the street.
Presently, yes.
Presently,
yes.
Okay. Related then question is, in terms of the scenario that you put together, you mentioned the idea of this two-court system. Were you suggesting that the city court would handle the arraignments countywide during the day, during business hours, or just for the city business during business hours?
Any combination thereof is fine. You know what? I kind of got what Judge Miller was getting at, and that is the possibility, and something you'd have to consider, of having city court be that night arraignment court.
I didn't know I was getting at that.
Oh, I thought you were. I thought that's what you were trying to do.
It was Freudian. My bad.
For us at Maine. Or Enfield. We could do it in Enfield. But back to our original point, we feel that it would make more sense to have it right where the jail is anyway. And it's pretty centralized. We're not reinventing the wheel. Right down in Chenango County, that they have centralized booking within their sheriff's office.
Go ahead. If it's apropos this point, because I just wanted to get Sergeant Daly's the number question. Sergeant Daly, could you, Under Sheriff Robeson has said that it's 1 to 3 hours. You gave us some other hours, but my question is, up to the point of from the time the trooper is confronting the problem to the time when a decision is, either an appearance ticket is issued or we're going to go search out a judge, your best estimate of that time frame?
I like the, 1.5 to 2 hours minimal you'd be saving. I mean, now I'm talking, I leave my station, I go to Town of Dryden Court instead of Ulysses or Enfield. I would say the minimal savings would be 1 to 2 hours.
So you've jumped ahead. So it's 1.5 to 2 hours would be the net savings as between having to go find a local court versus using centralized booking. Is that your testimony? I just want to make sure about that.
Yeah, I think that's a good guesstimate.
Per arrest.
Per arrest. Okay, and then I just have one other question. How many can either of you quantify, or both of you, frankly, quantify the number in this county, the number of after-hours arrests that result in searching out a local court versus appearance tickets? I'm just curious. Yes?
I'd probably say one or two at least a week, and I'm just, that's a, I'd really like to maybe do a little research on that.
So it's that level. It's on one hand per week?
Maybe that's a little low. I'd really like to look that up.
If I look at our jail statistics, and I look at the total intakes for the month of September, mm-hmm. I'm looking at 75 intakes. So 41 of those were felony intakes, and 31 of those were misdemeanor intakes. So on the low side, I can say that each of those people, obviously, they went in front of a judge. They went for arraignment. Mm-hmm. They were remanded. So I think you could take that number times roughly three and, you know, man hours per month, roughly. You know, that's probably going to change.
But you have to assume that there were also some of those folks who were released on bail, right?
These are jail intakes.
No, these are the jail intakes, but the people who ended up going to the local judge, presumably the local judge are...
Some of those folks. Also. Right. So I'm saying 75 would be the low number.
Right.
On the savings for September. I'm not sure how that rates, you know, what the average is per month, but...
And how many of those, I know we're kind of getting into the weeds at this point, but how many of those, first of all, do we have a number, or are we able to get a number as to how many of those were taken and then ROR'd or released on nominal bail so they didn't actually go into the jail system?
Can you do that? Well, countywide, we wouldn't have that statistic, but I can say that the sheriff's office had 43 misdemeanor arrests, whether there was a ticket issued or whether they were brought before a judge.
Yeah.
You know, that's so. No, I guess I can't give you the number.
It would take further digging. But then the related question is, with respect to especially the felonies or the other intakes, how many of those would have happened? In other words, were mandatory. They were like parole. You know, people taken into custody on parole violations.
It's not broke down. I'd have to. I'd have to go further somehow also.
I'm sorry, I've been kind of monopolized.
We're going to break it down by four. We're going to give you that number.
Oh, good.
We're going to do, there's been 241 approximately after hours of arraignment since we started it. Approximately 44% have been ROR released, 56% went to jail. We're going to break it down by four for you.
241 after hour arrests.
During? Okay. Fair enough. Judge Miller, Scott?
Sergeant Daly and also Under Sheriff Robeson, maybe more Under Sheriff Robeson, but if Sergeant Daly makes an arrest in a half an hour and it's a New York State police arrest within the county and out of Ithaca, Sergeant Daly wants to bring that person to this central booking facility. She comes with the paperwork, it's received electronically, it'll be sent to the town of Ithaca court at the same time it's received at central booking. Here's the logistical and security question that I haven't figured out, and I'm not gonna figure it out. I'm hoping you can figure it out. Can Sergeant Daly say to the central booking officers, here's defendant Jane Doe. Bye. Can she leave? And who are the officers that are in the central booking facility? Are they, I know they're not the New York State Police. Are they part of the Sheriff's Department? They're not the Ithaca Police Department. And how many officers do you need per individual defendant who's locked up in a holding facility? Isn't there some safety requirement that if there's one male or one female
locked up in a holding facility. You need a certain number of officers to be present while they're in that holding facility. How would that logistically work? I'm not going to hold you, but I don't have any idea of how that could work, and we need some sense of, give us an idea of what that could look like.
Okay. The first part of your question, I cannot answer because I don't pretend to be aware of all of the regulations for the state police. I'm not even sure that they can do what you just suggested they can do. That's to just simply have a signed accusatory, drop them off, say, see you later. I don't know that that's the case for them.
We do it in other parts of the state. I can tell you I've worked in Nassau County. We have done it in Nassau County. We will process a defendant. Sometimes it's, they search them right there, right? I'm bringing them in, and they literally take custody of our person prior to arraignment.
And what law enforcement is watching those defendants while they're waiting to go in front of a judge? Who are they turned over to by the New York State Police?
Nassau County, either police or Nassau County Detention is what it's called. Nassau County Detention.
Jailers.
Yes. So there.
Corrections officers. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
There is a set of standards for a lockup facility, and that's what that's called. I can tell you, for example, Chemung County Jail is a lockup facility for the city of Elmira. And what that is, that's a section in the law, and I'm probably not going to be able to tell you which law it is, but but there's a section there where it actually says Chemung County Sheriff can hold prisoners pre-arraignment. And there's a bunch of them. There's a bunch of counties listed that have that type of thing in there. In this whole scenario, I would see a central booking would have its own holding cells separately inside the facility, where you could probably isolate, similar to what IPD has right now. They have a lockup. That's called a lockup, which is also overseen by the Commission of Corrections. Those lockups, they do get inspected, records required. They have a lot of things required to do at that. Thank you.
Is your question answered? All right. Just one quick final area, electronic records. If we had some kind of an electronic record system where all of the courts were kind of tied into the same system, you guys would have access to that. From your perspective, is it going to make any difference? Or in other words, where you could just simply file the accusatories as opposed to taking them to the court? Would that make your job easier or not as easy? Any thoughts about any of those?
I mean, I'm sure the technology's there to do it. It wouldn't make any difference either way, however they want to handle it. But sure, as long as there's a way to sign it.
I think what I'm getting at is when you deliver records to a court, in other words, sometimes the records show up, do you drive those records to a court, or do you send them in the mail, or do you transmit them electronically?
Well, for arraignments, they're actually paper.
They're with you.
They're,
right.
They're signed documents.
And you're taking the suspect with you, and therefore,
right.
That makes sense. But what about if we were to do, sometimes there are later, I've been in court sometimes where all of a sudden a state trooper shows up or a deputy sheriff shows up and they drop papers off. And I always wonder, why don't they just mail these things or fax them or something? But I'm just curious, is that in fact the practice? Do you folks generally drive papers to court, or do you?
State police does, yes. We do drop-offs. Weekly on Sunday nights, I think we do it, yeah. And the DA's office, we drop it off personally. So it's personally, we have a little record of, we dropped off this case. So.
Why is it email?
Because it's always how we've done it. No, I don't. No, we're literally for the original part of it, to have an original document.
Well,
I mean, that's.
The law has changed radically in respect to what constitutes an original
right.
document. Right. Is any of
I definitely think it would be, sure.
Yeah. Okay.
For sure.
All right, thank you.
Yes, absolutely.
All right, does anybody else have any other questions?
I just have
Judge Poole, go ahead.
One quick question, and I'm just throwing this out there as an option. Has anyone looked at the possibility of both, number one, I'm going to bring it up, we're having a magistrates meeting, okay, and I'm going to bring up the issue with regard to court nights, so that's going to be addressed, so everyone knows. Has anyone looked into the possibility of satellite offices with a holding cell in there? Or, because I know there's one over in Newfield, I don't know if it's, is it still, or there was one, but it's just New York State Police.
Yeah, they have one.
Because at one point in time, I know that the Enfield supervisor was talking with, it might have been the Sheriff's Department, about a satellite office. Because everything seems to be located on the East Hill, nothing on the West Hill. And maybe sharing some services and costs, cutting there, that and changing, looking into the possibility of changing some court nights to assist in corrections, but yet the satellite offices assisting with arraignments and or processing and or paperwork. Just a thought.
Anybody like to comment? Go ahead.
Just one quick thing. Because we're talking about criminal arrests, and those folks do have to be processed, they have to be processed using digital fingerprints that are automatically, electronically sent. Those machines, only because we're in the process of getting a couple replaced, are well in excess of $20,000 a piece, and to get, which our building has two of them, and then to get another one to save time to put on the west side, I just don't think it would be cost effective to do that. And you know, quite frankly, there's other reasons why let's face it, our county is geographically relatively small. So, I mean, you can get from point A to point B fairly quickly. Yep. And lights and stuff, you can get there quicker than the average person, for sure.
Unless there's a train.
All right. No comment, having lived through that fight 30 years ago. All right, fair enough. Are you finished?
Yes.
Right? Okay, great. All right. Thank you very, very much, Sergeant Daly, Captain Bunce, Under Sheriff Robeson. This has been extremely informative, very helpful. I think there may be some follow-up with respect to some of the issues. I know at some point we may want some in terms of overtime costs and other items, and I appreciate your remaining available at least by email or phone call. All right?
Absolutely. But thank you.
Thank you so much. And for the panel, the last item is simply, have we added value by what we did here tonight? Quickly?
Absolutely, no doubt.
I say yes. Mark?
Yeah.
Well, that's good enough. Judge Miller?
Very, very substantive value. Thank you. Very informative. A lot of information. Very useful. Thank you.
Thanks a lot. We're adjourned. The next...